This is the DRF Players Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the February 13th edition of the DRF Players Podcast. I'm host Peter Thomas Formatale, back with you. Sitting next to me here in studio at DRF Formulator, Mike Hogan. How are you doing today, Mike?
I'm doing well, Pete.
And beamed in from the planet Texas, are going to be a regular on the show, or at least a semi-regular, somewhere between a semi-regular and a regular, NHC Tour champ from 2015. You know him, you love him, he's Jonathan Kinchin. How are you, Jonathan?
I'm good. I'm actually in my hometown of Euless, Texas, right outside of Dallas. I came to hang out with my dad for a week or so, and so it's kind of been kind of fun getting back home and seeing some of the old stuff that that I don't get to see being at Austin all the time.
No, that's very cool. I remember when first writing about you on the DRF site, when you exploded on the contest scene, that it was always, that's what I would always have in there. Euless, Texas, the pride of Euless, Texas, Euless, Texas, this, Euless, Texas, that. And at some point you were just like, dude, I live in Austin. Like, what am I supposed to know? Right there on NHC Qualify, it says Euless, Texas. I just like the way it sounds.
That's just proof of how long I guess the first time I ever signed up for like a free contest, I used my dad's address. So it must have been that long ago.
What do you have going on contest-wise this weekend? Are you going to be playing in anything?
Yeah, I'm going to play NHCQ for sure, and try to get my second seat and kind of get some points rolling towards the 2016 tour. And then I'll also play maybe BC Qualify, just depends. And then also DRF Qualify for sure, to try to get qualified for the Ultimate Betting Challenge. I'm really looking forward to the Santa Anita Gulfstream Combined Tournament coming up in March. And so if I can qualify my way in, then maybe I can buy another entry, or at least I can just save some money on the first one.
I like it. I like it. That's the way the schedule breaks is Saturday, NHCQ, DRFQ, Sunday, BCQ, DRFQ. So lots of action going on in the universe. Now, a lot of people, if you don't listen to the show right away, it's going to probably be too late for this information to be of any use to you. But I'm going to go ahead and say it anyway, and I'll tell you why afterwards. DRF tournaments is, folks
have been following
on Twitter for a while, but not much has happened with that Twitter feed. That's changing. That Twitter feed is becoming active. And as part of the promotions to get it started off, there's actually a way to win a free
$162 NHCQ
entry. So go, if you're listening to this shortly after it posts, go right this second to Twitter, at drftournaments.com, and retweet the pinned tweet at the top there. Make sure you follow DRF Tournaments as well, and you'll have a chance to win your way for free into the Saturday contest, compete against Jonathan, kick his butt, get some, you know, pride
for doing that,
and a chance
to win your way into the NHC.
Now, if you're listening a little bit later today and the bird has flown on doing this retweet contest, instead of cursing me, which you're entitled to, you should still go ahead and sign up for the, not sign up, go ahead and follow DRF Tournaments, because I have a feeling this won't be the only contest like this.
That's right.
So if you skip a tune to DRF Tournaments
on Twitter, there's going to be other opportunities like this to have a chance to jumpstart your way on the 2016
NHC Tour.
All right, with that business out of the way, guys, I want to talk about the news. Jonathan, I'm just going to put you on the spot. Have you been following what's going on in the world of racing? Anything you're looking forward to happening this weekend or in the coming weeks, or what's going on as far as that?
I tell you what, I did honestly have a little bit of a racing hangover, which I try to say that I don't have, but the I was pretty intensely plugged in for 2 weeks and or for 2 months leading into the NHC, and then obviously the NHC itself was a mentally draining situation, whether you're in my position that I was in or just if you're just there hanging out. It's a tough deal. And when I got back, I was a little bit drained. I kind of unplugged a little bit, but I've kind of plugged myself back in. I went to the Super Bowl last week, and I kind of pick and prayed some of the tournaments that were going on. They didn't go well. And so this week's going to be kind of my first week to kind of re-plug back in and go. But yeah, I've been keeping up a little bit. I guess I'm looking forward to it's Derby season. I filled out a top 10 poll the other day, which made me realize that it's right around the corner. So I'm looking
forward to that. Who are you doing that for?
I don't know. Not the DRF, darn it.
We got plenty of Derby coverage. You got You got, of course, Privman and Watchmaker always following there. You know, that's sort of like the industry standard leaders. But it's good to know, Jonathan, you're getting involved. You're getting involved with a little Derby Watch Junior Varsity somewhere as well. It's good stuff.
The B team.
What about Dubai? You guys been following any of these preps for the World Cup?
I did. I watched Frosted run. I don't know where I missed it, but I turned it on at the end, and it was actually really cool. I've never watched their broadcast very much, but you know, like on ESPN, they get the big board out and they have the experts sitting there touching the screen. They did this like 30-minute breakdown on Frosted switching leads and how he did it so effortlessly, and they like zoomed in on him and showed the jock's hands. It was actually really pretty cool. But
that's neat.
Yeah, no.
It's because they're all used to horses like Mubtaij who never switch leads, and so when they see a horse actually switch leads and take off, they just went crazy. It's like they lost their mind. Yeah. Like, what was that?
They were circling the screen and everything. It was great.
I've not been plugged in yet, but I do plan on following the big meeting.
What about yesterday? Did you any guys even on Twitter follow the way the market was going with marking?
No, I didn't pay any attention to this. Mike is the source, by the way, for the if ever I've missed Twitter for a couple of days, horse racing, I just call Mike and be like, hey, man, what interesting has been going on Twitter? And it'll give me three rundowns, and it's great. But tell me about what's the story with marking.
Well, marking, I mean, it wasn't even necessarily on Twitter, but if you're following, you know, of course, because you can't bet in Dubai. So if
in
you
theory.
Bet, well, right. You can't bet on track in Dubai, so you have to use an ADW, and the U.S. markets for the Dubai, through DRF Bets, of course, through any of them, it's all a U.S. pool. And then there's the U.K., there's the other pools. So unlike...
I think it's commingled with the U.K. tow pool, isn't it?
I don't think so, no.
Really?
Yes. And this is why, because in the U.K., so on the morning line, you know, I guess, I don't know who makes the morning line, but someone at the ADW made the morning line. They made marking 15-1. Which is pretty laughable. He opened at 1-5.
Maybe it was supposed to be 1-5. They were missing it was a typo.
He opened at 1-5, and I was like, oh, that's pretty funny. Granted, there was very little money in the pool. He drifts up to 1-2. He drifts up to 3-5. Somebody hammers him again. He goes back down to 1-5 as the loading into gate. He's 1-5 against horses like Rich Tapestry. Ronaldo the Wizard, you know, good horses proven at Maidan on that surface that are going to be competing in the Golden Shaheen. You know, this is Marking, who ran second to Run Happy. You know, he's lightly raced. He's a Godolphin runner. I'm sure they expect good things out of him and big things from him, but 1-5 against proven veterans was pretty silly. Gates open, you know, and so there's some discussion both on Twitter and here. Gates open, he goes down to his nose, jock falls off, end of the race right there for Mark.
Oh, that's brutal. That's brutal, brutal, brutal stuff.
Yeah.
But what else is going on in those preps? Anything, do you see anything else interesting?
Well, the aforementioned Mubtaij, he ran, he was off the board. He was not anything very good. There was a filly yesterday who ran by the name of Polar River. Again, I don't think she beat much. It may very well have been a case of, you know, My Johnny Be Good winning in the Dubai, what was it, the Dubai Derby or UAE Derby. She won impressively. They've got big things in mind. They're thinking Oaks for her. So we could see her over here. You know, granted, of course, she's probably likely going to face a filly like Songbird. And I think that's when she gets tested for class. But you could watch the replay; it was pretty impressive.
Yeah, I'll watch some of that tape in the prep for the big day over there. I probably should follow those meetings more than I do. It's just never really gotten on my radar. Do you follow the UAE stuff, Jonathan?
I it's fun to watch. I like to get up and watch. I remember I was at the I think it was the Horse Player World Series last year, and me and Nick Tamaro woke up and went down there and bet a bunch of rolling pick threes before we went over to the Orleans for the Horse Player World Series. It's a lot more fun when our horses are over there. It's a little bit more interesting. It's a little bit, you know, it gives us something to kind of root for. I think the World Cup will be fun this year with Frosted and California Chrome. And I've actually heard that there's others that are going to probably go as well. So, yeah, I get it. It's definitely better now that they have dirt. I can tell you that much. I care about it a little bit more than I did prior, but it's a cool thing.
that reminds me of some news we talked about on the Wednesday show when all the both of us and Steve Anderson were talking about Donworth and saying that we weren't, well, his comeback effort I thought was pretty good, that the Dubai move wasn't the one that we were hoping was going to happen for him for his own sake. What was the, you said there was a piece in DRF about him?
Yeah, well, Steve has a piece that's going on the site today that's about Donworth now targeting the big cap. So they're going to stay home with him. They were thinking Dubai, I think, off of that last race. I think maybe cooler heads prevailed. They're keeping him at home. But, you know, it's still going to be an interesting race, even not to mention any of the other foreign horses that might be there. For a U.S. racing fan, you'll have California Chrome, Frosted, Keen Ice, Mishawish is...
yeah, Mishawish is going.
Is going to go. I know I'm forgetting someone.
You said the three that I was the most looking forward to seeing.
Yeah.
But it's going to be very interesting heat. Mm-hmm. When you put up $10 million on a proper dirt surface, they will come, I guess, is the moral of the story. But let's pivot for a second to talk. Jonathan mentioned about filling out his Derby top 10 list. For me, last year was a unique year in that because of doing the show, and it was the first full year of the podcast, I did start paying attention to Derby doings early on. Many years, I actually deliberately try not to get too stuck in to Derby prep this early because I do believe you can develop sort of prejudices and pre-opinions where in the past I've had more success trying to look at the race once we actually know who's going to run in it and make judgments at that point. So, and that's more the path I've been following this year. I mean,
so you don't want to get married to anyone.
Yeah, I know who the favorites are, and there have been some efforts that have looked good, but I don't like have my quote unquote Derby horse at this point. But let me ask you guys. I'll start with you, Jonathan, since you had to put that list together. Is there anybody beyond? Well, actually, no. It can be one of the obvious contenders, or it could be somebody a little more subtle. Have you any early thoughts on this race?
No, I do the same thing. I think we actually talked about this before. Like in the past, you know, last year was the first Derby I've ever won. I always lose in the Derby, and it's because I become like a fanboy of a horse that I shouldn't become a fanboy of. And
who are some of the ones? Just to give us some historical perspective here:
Verrazano, Sydney's Candy, Soldat. I'm trying to think of horses that just crushed me. A Mucho Macho Man ran well, so I don't feel bad about that one. But it's just horses like that where Bodemeister, he ran amazing, so I don't feel bad about that one either. But I actually fell in love with him late. But I just feel like there's so many things that are going to happen and change that we're going to find out about these horses. And if you fall in love with a horse, then you start creating excuses for that horse when he doesn't do something that you thought what you actually believe that a Derby contender should do, finishing, handling two turns, so on and so forth. So this list is really like, I just put the obvious two that should be on the top on top. You know, I put Nyquist a little bit lower because I'm still convinced he doesn't want to go that far. But he sure as heck tried to prove me wrong.
And who'd you put in the number one spot?
Mohamed, and then More Spirit, Brody's Cause. And then my group, don't tell anyone, but my group text, the famous group text helped me fill out the rest.
So you don't have a sleeper at this point that you would describe as such?
No, I mean, I want to like that horse at Fairgrounds, Dolphus, just because of you know.
But I agree.
That's Rachel's
brother.
Yeah, but he hasn't been fast enough. So, but, you know, I put him on the list just to have a little change up there. I think the Shigoff horse might actually – I know that they really like that horse, Chad's other horse that he has down there in Florida. But, no, nothing groundbreaking at this point.
How about you, Mike? What are your early thoughts on the Derby?
Well, you know, as I'm sure you remember last year, you know, there was a horse around this time that I kind of fell in love with, a Cliff Sice horse, Prospect Park, who's actually running this weekend. He's actually not – he's cross-entered. He's not going to run – in the Arcadia tomorrow. He's going to run, I think, in an allowance race on Sunday. But aside from him, so Cliff Sice has another runner that I think is a little interesting, and he won an allowance race last Friday, and after I watched the replay, I tweeted, I will not fall for a cliffside horse. I will not fall for a cliffside horse. You know, but that said, he's interesting. He's got to do a little bit more. But if you're a speed figure guy, he got a higher buyer in that win, and it was a mile, than more Spirit got in winning stakes race last weekend. So I'm a little curious about him. I wouldn't say he's necessarily under the radar because I think a lot of people have been waiting for him to run. Dancing Candy is his name. So he's interesting. There's another one in Southern California I really like. I think Nyquist has proven me wrong, but prior to Nyquist's win in the BC Juvenile, I said I think the best two-year-old in California is a horse named Smoky Image, who
you've been talking about. You've talked about him before on the show.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, he's Calbred. He's kind of trying to do the California Chrome path. He's I think 5 for 5 now, maybe 6 for 6. Won his first race after switching to the barn of Carla Gaines, won it easily off a little bit of a layoff, first time going long. You know, he's another one that's got to improve.
When will we see him again?
I think he's going to try one of these Derby preps next. I don't know exactly when.
Nothing imminent.
No, I don't think so. Probably the San Felipe, maybe.
Do either of you guys know Brody's Cause's next move?
I don't.
I don't either.
I'm sure if we go right on DRF.com to the Derby Watch, Privman and Watchmaker will tell us. I don't have my computer in front of me today, but that's why you got to, you know, have that site bookmarked.
You know, it's funny. I would imagine he's training in Florida with Dale, but I would think that he would be one of those types of horses that Dale might want to get out of Florida because of his running style, and we all know what kind of track profile we can get at Gulfstream in the winter, you know, on these big days. And so I wouldn't be surprised if Dale got him out of there and took him somewhere else to try to get his prep race in. Dale's shown that he can get a horse ready for the Derby. Although his horses haven't won, they always seem to run well. There's always one that runs really, really well in the Derby, Shackleford, Dullahan. There's another Donegal, Patio Prado. So, you know, I would imagine that he's not going to try to win. You know, winning this race doesn't really matter, the next one, whatever it is, but just getting him to the big show is probably what's important to Dale.
Now, I'm definitely interested to follow along with what happens with him. I don't have a Derby horse for you. I'm taking my one-time Derby horse announced on the show last fall, and I'm moving him for my Traverse horse. And that's Sail Away.
Okay.
Because I guess he's still not in training. So I think we can pretty much say that the Derby isn't going to happen. But from Shug McGahey, he's a bit grindy. But, you know, 1.25 miles at Saratoga, if he continues to improve the way that both his trainer and his pedigree suggest that he might, 10 furlongs late August in Saratoga might just be what he wants.
Or maybe next year he's your Whitney horse.
But there he go. The honor code round?
Exactly. That's kind of what
we'll
I'm thinking.
Call that?
Yes. Exactly.
I like it. All right. Well, I think we're just about ready to dive into these public handicapper races for the weekend. Unless you have any other news and notes before we...
Not necessarily. But before we dive into the four public handicapper races, there are some interesting other stakes races that we might want to mention. I don't know, Jonathan, if you've looked at all of them, aside from the two we're going to be talking about at Tampa tomorrow and public handicapper, there's some other interesting races there, most notably.
Champion returns.
Yeah, exactly. The return of Teppan. You know, and Mike Watchmaker tweeted, you know, kudos to the Tampa Bay Downs for getting 6 other fillies and mares interested in lining up to face Teppan.
Well, this is the time. This is the time you want to run against her, though, isn't it? I mean, coming off of a break, off of a Breeders' Cup, obviously they have bigger goals down the line. Why not run against her now?
That's what I'm thinking. And I think, you know, I mean, look, she's the best filly and best mare in the race, but I'm thinking she's not a lock here, and she's probably going to be. She's 7-5 morning line. She might be 1-2 in the actual betting. Jonathan, do you have an opinion on the race? Did you look too closely at it?
I didn't look at it too closely, but just – taking a peek at it, you got to think that the 3 other fillies that will obviously take a little bit of money, Partisan Politics, Lady Lara, and Photo Call, you know, this is a spot you would expect them to be probably a little bit more crank. Lady Lara's, they're all coming off of a little bit of a break. Partisan Politics ran down in Gulfstream, but I think this is the type of spot that a lot of money is going to come in on Teppan. It doesn't seem to be a lot of pace in the race, and it's a good opportunity to try to beat her. I mean, imagine how many people are going to single her in all the picks and stuff like that. If you can beat her here, not saying take anything away from her. I think she's an amazing, amazing mare, and I can't wait to watch her run this year. but this might be the time to try to get her. I think it's interesting that Cassie sends up Lexi Liu. Maybe it just made – well, she, I guess she's been at Tampa, but running her against the stablemate, I think, is an interesting angle as well.
She's my sleeper.
Yeah, she's my sleeper. You were dispensing some love on Twitter.
Yes,
for
a little bit. You did see Twitter.
I occasionally look. Mostly I just look where it says notifications, and I look at those.
You didn't chime in, though. I was curious what your take
what
was.
Well, why don't you pose the question that you posed on Twitter to me and Jonathan, and we'll just answer it.
Well, okay. So here you go. Is Lexi Liu the 2016 version of Teppan? Let me put it this way. Am I crazy to think that she could be? You know, so...
Okay,
so
they're two very different
they
questions.
They are, yeah. Because I'm not saying she will be, and I'm not saying she's a lock, but I can foresee a lot of... I can see some really clear similarities, and after you guys answer, I'll kind of walk through the case.
Jonathan, you go first.
Yeah, well, the biggest difference that I can think of, which is that Lexi Liu's won some big-time graded stakes. I remember so distinctly because it was one of the best scores of my life. Teppan on Derby Day was an unknown a little bit. I think she had won an allowance race at Gulfstream or ran well in an allowance race at Gulfstream, and so I guess that would be the biggest difference if we're for the sake of the conversation. But I understand what you're saying is that Lexi Liu could have a breakout year and be something special moving forward. But she's kind of shown that she's a pretty darn good filly in the past, anyways.
Well, yeah, but Teppan had won the Delta Princess, a grade three. She was grade two stakes placed on the turf, as a three-year-old. They certainly thought a lot of her, but you're right. She didn't become the monster that she obviously did until well into her four-year-old year. But you're right. I mean, I think that there's a lot of people that really underestimate Lexi Liu. She's won, like you said, multiple graded stakes, or at least one graded stakes. One graded stakes, and then a lot of listed stakes up in Canada. She's won almost $1.5 million. But people still underestimate her.
I think the big reason why I would say. I'm not going to say I think you're crazy for the opinion. If you asked it just in a declarative, is she this year's, I would have confidently said no. But I'm not willing to quite call you crazy. But the point that I'll make is I think it's a lot more likely to see a quantum leap in any horse of either sex going from three to four than it is from four to five.
That's fair, but look, she lost her four-year-old year. She lost her four-year-old year. She ran a lot as a three-year-old. A lot as a three-year-old. I don't count them. Eight races, maybe. They were all on synthetic and turf. The last turf race she ran, let's remember, it was the Hollywood Derby where she ran second to the horse of the year. She beat a horse in Talco who came back and won a grade one.
I know what you're saying.
What I'm saying is at the time everybody thought this is a horrible field.
I know what you're saying. That form has gotten a big boost, but the race, like how it was run, it was kind of farcical, I thought.
That's fine, but what I'm saying is that's the last time we saw her on turf for over a year. She ran in the La Cañada where she ran second. In January of last year, and then she was off for just shy of a year, like 4 days shy of a year, where she came back in an allowance race. So basically, we haven't seen her, at least on turf, since her three-year-old season.
That's a fair point.
So that is part of it, is that expected improvement of a horse that they obviously thought a lot about as a three-year-old. And even though she's five, it's still, she lost a year of training. That return race, I mean, you could watch the replay. She ran behind two. She's facing tomorrow. She was by far the best. There was no way she was winning as wide as she went on both of those turns. I'm not saying it's a gimme or a given, but her PPs on turf look very similar to Teppan's PPs on turf prior to that win on Derby Day.
Will you be backing Lexi Liu against Teppan tomorrow, Mike?
It depends on the price that I get, but at the expected price...
What would your fair odds be, approximately?
Well, she's 8-1 on the morning line. I think Jonathan's right. The Teppan's going to take money. I think the other three logical contenders in Partisan Politics, Lady Lara and Photocall, who's starting for the first time in Todd Pletcher's barn after selling for $3 million at the Keeneland auction in November, I think they'll all take money. I think there's a chance she floats up to 10 to 1. That would be fair to me. And at that price, I'd probably put a few bucks on her just for fun.
Lots of interesting action at Tampa Bay tomorrow. That's the eighth race. The ninth race is the first of our four public handicapper races. If you haven't already started, you can right now go to publichandicapper.com and join in the Public Handicapper Prep Contest. Going to be going on for the next several weeks. And don't worry if you know you're at a little bit of a disadvantage to win the whole thing for having sat out a week last week, but you're still not out of it for the big contest. It's free anyway, so why not? And
you also have
weekly and monthly prizes on publichandicapper.com. Great way to stay plugged into horse racing action and contest action specifically all year long. So the ninth race at Tampa is the Suncoast. It's a mile 40 yards on the dirt. Jonathan, as our guest, we're going to give you the honor of starting off with your thoughts on the Suncoast.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not convinced about Cosmic Girl. This is the type of race where I'm a sucker for speed. I've talked about it a lot. I had an alert set on my phone every morning of the NHC speed over closers that would go off to remind me that I didn't want to get sucked into to taking too many closers. This is the type of race where a horse like Valuable Charmer is just a horse that I want to give a shot. You know, she's shown that she can get to the lead. She did it twice sprinting. It didn't turn out well for her going seven. Maybe they learned something about her. Now they're stretching her out. When I see a horse blatantly fail at something and the connections are high percentage connections and they still move forward with a horse, it makes me feel like they figured something out that I didn't figure out, and they're going to give this filly another chance. It could be Oaks fever or whatever, and that happens too sometimes. When I know my horse at the front end and the rest of them are going to have to catch her, that's a horse that I love, especially at this type of price.
We lost the second half of what you said there, but I'm pretty sure we got your idea about Valuable Charmer possibly being the speed is the speed. The other thing is, she's doing something significantly different today in that she's going farther, so maybe that sprint speed will indeed help her clear. For me, there's just so much other speed in the race, and I do understand that the Johnny Stack's handicapping theory, it's basically a no-closer zone, but I think there's enough. This is a case where, not necessarily for my for betting on a site like Public Handicapper, where you only pick the winner, but in my actual play in the race, I could see using a horse like number three, Weep No More, potentially as a key underneath. The kind of horse that I could see very much running third or fourth in the super. Because there's a couple of things that I'm intrigued by with Weep No More. But the main thing is an ability to pass horses and the fact that she goes out for Rusty Arnold, who I just associate as a trainer whose horses are going to continue to improve with their racing. So I think I could see her picking up pieces, but might be hard to get into the top two slots for the exacta. But for an underneath key, that's one who I'm going to be having a look at. In terms of who I might pick in Public Handicapper, I'm leaning at the minute towards going with number 11, Smart Shopping. That race, the lone race at Gulfstream, at Churchill, I know it was in the slop, but it looked to be a live race. A couple of those horses had come back and won. The work tab heading into this looks good. I'm projecting some improvement off that figure with the time that's passed since Smart Shopping's race at Churchill. And there's enough there. The 4-1 of the morning line would probably be enough for me. I might even accept a tick down to 7-2. Probably wouldn't go lower than that. It's a tricky race, and I could see Smart Shopping getting a good trip and might be a more likely winner than Weep No More. But I like the idea of Weep No More as a key in those underneath slots. Mike, what do you have here?
You know, it's a fun race. I love these kind of races, lightly raced fillies, 3-year-old early in the year. And it's a mix of, I think, ultimate, let's be honest, it's a mix of past and future claimers and blue blood pedigrees. You've got, I mean, you can see which ones are coming from the claiming ranks. taking a stab against horses that are out of a filly like Stellar Jane, who won 4 graded stakes, 3 grade ones, and you look through her PPs, you see names like Ashado, Storm Flag Flying,
You're referring to the presumable favorite, Cosmic Girl.
The morning line favorite, Cosmic Girl. I would frankly be a little surprised if she goes off as the actual favorite, because I think your horse, Smart Shopping, is going to take a lot of money, and I think that the Todd Pletcher, Javier Castellano team is going to be a lot lower than the 6-1 morning line. That's Holder's season. You know, you've also got a filly who's out of Wild Gams. She was a multiple graded stakes winning sprinter. You got a lot of interesting pedigrees. So I love this kind of race that are, you know, still a bunch of lightly raced ones. I'll mention Smart Shopping is a half to Power Broker.
Yep.
2 graded stakes
shop
wins.
Again, terrific mare.
Exactly. So, and I'll also say she is the only one in her immediate family, the only one of her siblings to actually win sprinting. So they all won, even Power Broker never won sprinting. I think the distance will be better for her. If you were to ask me who the best racehorse is likely to be in this field, I would probably answer Smart Shopping. I just don't know at the price she's likely to be if this is the spot to play her.
Where did you end up?
I actually ended up on the other one you made the case for, which is Weep No More, who lost in her debut to Smart Shopping, but she broke slow. She was way out of it. She showed a little bit of late run. It's the kind of debut, especially for a trainer like Rusty Arnold, who doesn't crank them first out, that I don't mind.
They usually continue to improve.
Exactly. She's another one who, pedigree-wise, wants to go longer. She is, I think, out of a young mare who didn't really do much, but the second dam is Flute.
Yeah, I mean, the pedigree, he got...
and Flute produced, aside from winning the Kentucky Oaks and the Alabama, all on dirt, she produced Falimbi and some other nice runners. So the pedigree is fantastic. The pedigree says distance. That last race, which I'm sure you saw, it says inside trip rally. She tried a couple times to make a move through. She kept getting shuffled back. She made like 2 or 3 runs, was well out of it on the turn for home, ran down a 6-5 favorite who was dropping out of a stakes race back into the maiden ranks. She's one that I think is going to get overlooked because people will see that 58 buyer and think, she's just not fast enough. But I think there's a lot there.
Oh, all right, a couple of votes for Weep No More and couple other, one live favorite and a live price from Jonathan in the Sun Coast. Let's move on to the Tampa Bay. Mike, I'm going to make you keep talking and give your thoughts on this race. This is a turf race. We're going 1 1/16, and we're looking at older horses here.
Well, in this is a race where I think the morning line favorite is by far the most legitimate contender, and that's number one War Correspondent, 7-2 morning line. If I get anything close to that, even at 5-2, I'd be happy to make that my pick in public handicapper. It's that favorite team of Christophe Clement and John
Love
V.
Love those guys. You love those guys.
Well, gee, if all you do is win races together, yeah, I'm going to love you. They're 11-20 in the last 2 years in graded stakes routes, and that includes the dirt races because they did pretty good work together with Tonalist.
I've heard of him.
15-20 in the exacta in those races. Coming off of a long layoff, War Correspondent ran a little bit like a short horse in the last race. I'm willing to forgive him. Of course, he lost a heart to heart. Luke's Alley, who came back to win, All Included, who came back to run well. You look in the PPs, you see Mishawish, you see Luke's Alley, you see a horse who now in the second start off a long layoff, and this is a horse that has had a lot of layoffs. So I like that Christophe is putting him right back in without another layoff here. He's just the class of the race. He's probably the best horse in the race, and he's not facing a bunch of monsters, in my opinion.
The layoffs are a concern, but the other thing I'll underline about that last race is I thought it had the look of kind of a buried race to me, in that it was a day when the turf was playing to speed, heart to heart went wire to wire in a flow that should have favored horses running on the lead, and War Correspondent was racing against that flow, 3 wide and 2 wide. So
yeah,
I mean, there is a ton to like.
It was a big race.
The question I do just have questions about all the layoff lines. This is not something I like to see in a horse who might end up going off a shorter price than that. Another horse who might go off shorter than the morning line, but who I'm just interested in as a horse, is Reload for Shug McGahey. He also had, in his last start, some factors working against him, I thought. Most specifically, just not breaking very well. He's run some of his best races off the layoff.
He's another one that's a little ouchy, though. I mean, he seems to need a layoff.
It's true, but when you look at his biggest races, even ones that don't, you know, you might take a look at the Forbidden Apple and see, he was fourth off the layoff there. That was a big race. You got to remember, that's where the other speed wrangled back, and King Carissa was basically allowed to walk on the lead that day, if I'm remembering the right race. Mm-hmm. And that's not the only one. You see another 100 buyer figure coming right off the layoff. I think if Reload is ready, he's shown he can be versatile tactically and could be very interesting. If you could lock it in at the 6-1, that's probably where I'd go right now. I'm still gonna kick the tires on this race a little bit more before making a final commitment in public handicapper.
But before we kick it to Jonathan, do you want a ridiculous price play just based on trainer stats?
I think
don't do it. It better not be mine.
Okay, no, you do it. You do it first.
No,
you do it. Is it Spark Kit?
No, you got it. Go ahead.
Spark Kit, trainer Gerald Assinger. I don't even know if that's how you pronounce his name. I mean, this guy is the kind of guy I love as a horse player. All of his runners in the last 5 years, he doesn't just have a positive ROI. He has a $3.08 ROI. So if you bet every one of the horses that he entered in the last 5 years,
50% on your money.
54% profit, just flat. And in Turf Routes, it's even better.
How many runners are we talking with this
guy? We're talking, it's like 180-something starts. 17%. Yeah. Turf Routes, that's where he does his biggest damage. 23 for 105, 22% win rate, 473 ROI. He's popped at 32-1, 66-1, and of course our buddy Dromedy at 30-1 in the Elkhorn, another public handicapper race last year. So just at a price, why not? He's also 5 for 17, dirt to turf in routes, 1070 ROI. That 66-1 winner was included in that. So
you don't need a lot of reasons to throw in a horse that's going to be the price that Spark Kid is. I'll give you that.
On paper,
I don't see it.
Has some speed,
but
there's other speed in the race. But who knows? Maybe he gets the jump, and they think this 60-1 crazy horse, let's let him go.
We've seen it before. I'll say that much. We've seen it before. Jonathan, where did you end up here?
Well, just a little bit to Mike's point, when I did my jockey work before the NHC, Fernando de la Cruz was extremely impressive. So there's another angle in which you can beat me in the NHC tomorrow when that horse wins and I don't have him.
You couldn't bet him despite that case? You can't see it?
Well, no, I see it.
We got a speed horse. We got a good trainer stat. We got a jockey you like.
Tested for class, of course, but
maybe if you play two entries, would he be on one, or you would have this horse anywhere near?
Well, I kind of like two other horses. It actually depends. The horse that I was going to talk about a lot, if I don't think he'll be 10-1 for one. If he is 10-1, you know, that I feel inclined to use him. The only negative there is we all know how Mott is off of a break. He doesn't crank horses up, and so that would be one negative. But if you look back through a lot's past performances and you see third, second, first. You know, and they're all against horses that were at one point or still are regarded as good horses. Night Prowler, Divisidero, Conan the Barbarian, Gallery, Takeover Target, Offering Plan. And so when I see a horse like that who's been running against really good horses, has great connections, I see 10-1, I get a little bit excited, despite having to overcome a little bit of a break that we know that Mott, like I said, doesn't crank them. The other horse that's a little bit interesting to me, when I thought you were going to ruin my price horse, is the 4, Flashy Chelsea. I mean, if you know, I love horses like this, where they have this dirty dirt form, and then you have to dig a little bit deeper to see that, oh, wait, she can actually, or he can actually run. I hate when they do that, the Chelsea thing. And then
right.
Can actually run on the grass. And so, you know, the only negative about this is the kind of horse in tournament that, although he's 30-1 on the board, he's 15-1 in the room. And that can be a little aggravating. But, you know, if I can get 30-1 on that one, I'll take a look. If a lot gets bet down, then I'm going to steal Mike's idea and use the 9 as well.
From watching the tape on a lot, my fear, I know what you're saying about the company lines, but just something about him in the past has struck me that he's just kind of a nibbler, and there's like maybe he's just okay running in the top three. He doesn't have that. I mean, maybe I'm anthropomorphizing here a little bit, but that maybe he doesn't have that instinct for the wire. Am I being harsh, or does a lot have a little hang in him?
Well, Pete, I'm going to remind you of a special day we're at Saratoga, and you bet a filly named Miss Temple City.
And I remember it well.
I'm not into jockey bashing, but there was a jockey that was riding that day. If you care enough, you can look it up. And I believe that jockey was responsible for some of the rough situations that a lot has found himself in.
Interesting. All right. We'll have to... Folks can do the research on that as they will. So, yeah, I mean, and a lot of that's overblown. I mean, somebody will see... You'll see 5 seconds to three wins. I mean, it's not even a horrid ratio. It's not like sometimes you'll see these horses who are 2 for 18 with 9 seconds,
yeah.
And that idea maybe has a little more merit.
I call them pack animals.
Yeah, that was my just sort of gut on a lot, but I recognize that I could be being unfair. I just figured I'd bring it up as a point of discussion.
And one of those seconds was to the great Divisadero. So
that was an important race for you, as I recall.
a little bit.
The other thing I'll say two things about a lot, who I think is interesting here, and if you get 10 to 1 or even higher is worth playing, because first start as a four-year-old, there could be that improvement. I think was a little up against it in the last start, was trying to close in. The rails were at 115 feet. Solemn Tribute basically had him all his own way. And then there was a blanket finish at the end. The horse that ran second, Team Colors, was the only one to close ground. But a lot was trying to do so too. It's kind of long on value play, you know, the Mott horse who maybe is kind of a nibbler and not quite there as a three-year-old, and then four-year-old, and boom, he pops.
That's a fair point. I love that long on value. That's for sure. That one I had more positive vibes about just off the paper. But all right, I've done a bad job as a host. We've only got 17 minutes left.
Okay. We've got two more races to look at.
So I think these are less interesting. So
that was sort of my gut, really. Yeah. But it's always, you know, if you can't knock yourself, who can you knock?
Yeah.
So let's talk about the 7th at Golden Gate. This is a Derby prep race in theory, anyway. It's the El Camino Real. It's a grade 3 on the wax at a mile and an eighth.
It's the community college version of a Derby prep race.
That's not unfair. I will start off here because my thoughts are very quick. I was going to take a long look at Cassiopeia for Graham Motion, the number 2 horse in the race. The biggest case to me came from Formulator, actually. And it was just trying to figure out what's going to happen with this horse, how this horse is going to change in the care of Graham Motion. If you're one of those unfortunate souls who only has a print version of the PPs, you're just going to see Graham Motion with first time horses in his care for the first time with a 12% win percentage and a lowly ROI less than a dollar. However, if you're a Formulator user, and you click on Motion and look at his stats with horses in his care for the first time over the last 5 years, those numbers swell to 19% and a nearly $2 ROI, clocking in at $1.86.
Also, just looking at
Cassiopeia's last race, seemed like one to me who's eligible for improvement. Just didn't really race very comfortably
in the last race. I think this horse is probably in Florida under Motion's care. Had a chance to maybe figure out the game a little bit more. I could see a much better race.
And I'm hoping, again, though, I am hoping that
7-2 is
hello.
I wouldn't want to go much lower than that, and I don't know how the betting is going to go in this race. But that was my...
That was my thought here. Jonathan, what did you come up with?
Yeah, no, I kind of agree with you on that. I you know, if you look at Cassiopeia, well, so when I looked at him, I saw a couple of things. I saw Team Valor, which I respect them as a syndic. I think they do a really good job, especially identifying horses in overseas that can come over here and perform well. I know how upset Motion is that we've lost a lot of the synthetic tracks, because I think he has an eye for finding out kind of horses excel well in those situations. And then when I looked down at his running line, I noticed that horse Riker, who set the pace, is who beat him, who set the pace in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. So, the running lines, everything makes sense. Drayden's taking the day off to come up to ride the horse. It seems like all systems go. Mr. Coker, I think you have to consider. I've been impressed with both of his races. He raced against a horse that Mike mentioned earlier, Danzig Candy. He finally broke his maiden in his next start. And then Hollendorfer sends the red hot Sal Gonzalez, who I've been unbelievably impressed with watching Santa Anita. He brings him up. He's a candy ride. He should handle the surface. I think those two are really interesting.
Distance wise for Mr. Coker would seem the other obvious question.
Do either of you look deep enough into the pedigree to get any suggestions there, or do you just have the
candy ride they run on
cut glass, they run as far as they want, etc.?
I did, Jonathan. Did you?
No, I can glance while someone else.
I did. Our Christie, his dam, was essentially a dirt router. She won the Turn Back the Alarm. She was a good one. And she was a half herself to a horse named Bulls Bay.
Bulls Bay ran in the Whitney against Rachel Alexander, right?
Yes, and another time he won the Whitney. It might not have been the saltiest running of the Whitney, but he did win the Whitney. He also won the Ali Sheba. Pedigree.
Graham Motion trained him. Unless that was a synaptic misfire.
I didn't look that deeply. I just do remember Bulls Bay was a good one. He only wanted to go long. I don't see any reason why Mr. Coker won't stretch out. If I were to get 9-2,
I think this horse is going to be hammered, guys.
Exactly, which is why I can't pick him. Yeah. Because he is, if you talk about, if I just say, okay, Mike Watchmaker, Jay Privman, who are your Derby contender horses? Mr. Coker is going to be on the list of many, more so than anybody else in this field. He's going to be probably your favorite, unfortunately. And there's enough questions there that I don't know if I want him in a race like Public Handicap or even in real betting. I'm kind of with you guys on Cassiopeia. I think you're right, Jonathan. If Riker were in this race, Riker's your favorite, even with Mr. Coker here. Form lines are good. He's a horse that I think can improve off of that bit of freshening. I don't want any of the ones coming out of the Cal Derby at Golden Gate. I don't think Frank Conversation is going to be 2-1. I don't think he's going to be your favorite. I think it's going to probably be Mr. Coker.
Does anybody have anything in here, if only for underneath or
as a longer shot to throw
in for folks? I feel like we're okay, good.
I do too. So
okay, great.
I kind of like this horse. Another one making first start for a new trainer, making first start in North America. That's Oscar Dominguez for Paddy Gallagher. Broke his maiden last out in December at Dundalk for Aidan O'Brien. Derek Fisher's reached out and bought a lot of horses from overseas and sent him to Paddy Gallagher. And he does well with them in stakes races. In graded stakes, they're 2-for-5. First start in North America, first for the new trainer, 531 ROI. He's also getting the lightest weight he's ever run in his career. You know, for him, it's a 9-pound weight break, even though he's not getting weight from the rest of the field necessarily. At 15-1, he's one that I wouldn't be surprised if he runs better than that. And that said, I don't know if he's the most likely winner.
Who's your price, Jonathan?
Diplodocus. I think that I love horses like this that the trainers thought enough of how they trained on the dirt to run them on the dirt and then eventually had to switch them to the turf. And then the horse ran well on the turf. I feel like somewhere in between the turf and the dirt falls the synthetic and we get a horse like this. Richie Baltus has been obviously on fire down at Southern California, winning a lot of big races and not so big races. And I think that horse will probably run really well.
That's an interesting one for Russell the Muscle there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, notable. He picks up the winningest jockey in racing history.
Not a bad one to have in the irons. All right, we're actually doing okay. Now we got about 10 minutes and we've got one race to talk about and then any other foolishness we want to throw in there. But the fourth public handicapper race is the Grade 2 Santa Maria, 1/16 on the dirt at Santa Anita. Older fillies and mares. We've got some old friends in here. Mike, I'm going to let you start this one off.
Oh, boy.
I think you've tipped every horse in this race.
At some point, I have. I'm going to go back to the well with Yahilwa. I'm going to kind of lean against Terra's Tango because I think she's just going to be too short. I'm kind of way against Bird at the Wire. I think she's better sprinting. I know that they have bigger things in mind for her. Did not really like that last race at all. I thought Yahilwa ran better. The running line says fanned wide. I feel like Bird at the Wire did that all on her own. I felt like she didn't want a corner, which to me is a sign of perhaps a sore horse. She ran on well, but she was way in the middle of the track. I don't know. At 5-2 or even shorter, she's one I would lean heavily against. I think Terra's Tango is probably one that's going to improve and probably is more of a router, so she fits. But Yehilwa, she just always runs well. I mean, it's crazy to think that with all of the success she's had and how many races she's run, she's only got one graded stakes win. I think they want to try and get more graded stakes wins for her and maybe a grade one this year. She's got early speed. You know, she could be your third choice there with some facing some stretch out horses that might be a little vulnerable. I just didn't really love anybody else.
Jonathan, where did you go in here? I know you, like Mike, liked Yehilwa back in the Breeders' Cup Distaff. Is this going to be another day that you want to be on her, or are you going in a different direction?
No, I love Terra's Tango. I thought that her first race back, I thought it was curious that she was going 6.5 after the success that she had going two turns. And then she galloped out huge in that race. And then she comes back in this race and just she really leveled off late. In the Santa Monica leveled off late. And I think she's going to – I actually think she's going to win for fun. I like Yehilwa. I'm not sure – maybe she doesn't want to be a horse anymore and she just wants to go and make babies. And then living the life is like a typical to me – they don't have Polly. They keep running on the dirt. She doesn't want to run on the dirt. Bird at the Wire, I completely agree with Mike. She is a one-turn horse, and she just does not want to go two turns. She's trained well all the time leading into two-turn races, and she never runs well. I mean, unless you want to say the Gulfstream Park Oaks. But, I think Terra's Tango is going to win for fun.
I'm a Terra's Tango fan as well. I thought the last race was really good. You don't really see it in the running line, but in the tape of that race, that was a race we did on the podcast, and we had both picked Terra's Tango and Eric Wigmace. She was an ouchy, unbridled song, which I thought was a possibility that that might be what was going on there. But and you know, just looking at the bare result, maybe you could continue to think that. But when you watch the tape,
that was a speed favoring day at Gulfstream.
I don't know if you had or at Santa Anita. Yeah. I don't know if you had that as a speed favoring day as well, Jonathan. But
I thought it was a very good day for speed. Maybe a little bit to the inside. Terra's Tango
actually broke well. Mike Smith kind of wrangled her back. I had her at one point being as many as 4 lengths back in there. And then she makes this big move 4 wide against the track and just misses to the 1,000-to-1 shot. I thought it was better than it looked on paper. I'm a big fan of hers. Mike makes an excellent point about her being short for contest purposes. But in terms of my pick for the race and who my biggest A would be, it's going to be Terra's Tango.
Yeah, let me go on record right here. She's the most likely winner in the race. I just am afraid she's going to be lower than the 2-to-1 morning line. And I can see Yehilwa improving in the second start off the layoff and being 2 or 3 times that price. But for me, it's just those two. Although I will give a crazy, crazy, crazy a case for a crazy long
shot.
We
like
here.
That. Star well, when Act. When we like it.
How about Star Act?
Let's talk about Star Act for a minute.
Star Act by Street Cry out of Starr. Starr is a bit of a trivia question.
Familiar, but I'm not coming up with
Star
it.
Star is the answer to a trivia question. She was a really good mare. She is the first, of course, a lot of people remember one prominent grade one winner on dirt for Dynaformer, but Star is the first grade one winner on dirt for Dynaformer.
Interesting. Who's the prominent one you're thinking of? Dynever?
Barbaro.
Oh, Barbaro, duh. Forgot about him for a second.
Little horse you might have heard of named Barbaro.
I knew I was missing somebody obvious, but Dynever just stuck in my
head. Yeah.
It was long before Barbaro.
So anyway, Star only ran on the dirt. Star never even tried the turf. This horse has only run once on the dirt. That was sprinting in her debut at 5.5 furlongs. They immediately move her to the turf. She's run some okay races. She's kind of gone off form lately. Art Sherman's now trying the dirt. She's going to be a huge, huge price. And this isn't a monster field. Why can't she pick up the pieces and light up the board at 45-to-1?
I mean, that's a good case for that's a good pedigree-based case for a long shot right there, I think. Something to maybe think about throwing in. So, Jonathan, I'm going to put you on the spot, and I think I know the answer, and I think it's a negative, but did you have a chance to listen to the Wednesday podcast we did, specifically the interview with Paul Matisse?
I haven't yet, but I do know some of the highlights, and I got the live version from Paul at the Treasure Island bar.
You were sitting near him, right?
Yeah, it was great. I that was the most fun part of the weekend, is getting to listen to him talk and getting to spend time with him and Duke and those guys and what they do. And I mean, they're just next level.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. I aspire to. Duke had his PPs at the Super Bowl when we were walking in firing. That's my man. He's my idol.
That's pretty fantastic. I love it. But yeah, Paul talks about the challenges facing both players in this day and age and some of the things you have to be thinking about, the level at which you need to be playing this game if you want to compete on a professional level. I just
find it inspiring to know that there's just so much more to learn.
You know, I guess one could be intimidated by that idea, but that's not the way I look at it.
I just
think it's great that there's basically an individual competing with the computer guys and all these other players. So he gives us a little insight to what it's like to be a professional player.
Talks about the appeal of contests.
He walked us through some contest strategy stuff.
There was also, I thought, next level about
handicapping a contest in terms of what he thinks is going to happen big picture in the whole thing, and how he used that at the end of the
show between the new rules and the weather.
It's good stuff. And if folks are listening to today's show,
I highly recommend you go back
and check that out. I really enjoyed Steve Anderson's appearance too, talking about the action from Santa Anita last weekend. But Paul, I'm going to try to do a little write-up of it as well. So hopefully we'll get a version of that appearing in print, or at least on the website, drf.com, in the next few days. We've got a minute left or so, guys. Any closing thoughts?
I'm excited about the idea. I cannot wait to see what happens when obviously an Ohm hook up, and let's see who's gutted in that race. It's not going to be the best betting race, obviously, but I'm super, super excited to see that. I think those are two unbelievably talented racehorses, and I can't wait to watch what happens there.
Is that one on Saturday as well?
It is. The third.
Excellent.
The third at Santa Anita.
Very cool. Very cool. Mike, anything else from you? Anything going on DRF.com folks should know about?
Well, next week, you and I are doing a webinar, so sign up for that.
Do we have a topic yet?
We do. We're going to be looking at the sibling and sire stuff, so a lot of that information that I have about star running only on the deal, we'll show you how to use that. We'll show you some of the other tools, even that live outside of Formulator. Sire and sibling stuff, we'll try and find a couple fun races where there's a lot of lightly raced horses, maybe some maiden races to take a look at.
That'll be on Thursday. Where can folks sign up for that?
Starting next week, you'll likely get an email if you're on email list for DRF promoting it. Also, starting early next week, you'll see it at the top of DRF.com in the marquee. I can tweet out the link to sign up as well if you want to find it. But there should be plenty of ways for you to see it. And of course, if you can't make it, we'll archive it and post it to YouTube.
Absolutely.
I was just going to plug the
YouTube DRF channel as a place to find all our past webinars. You get the last word, Jonathan, and then I'll send it home.
2-year-old champions back on Monday, San Vicente at Santa Anita. That'll be fun.
Oh, very cool, cool. We're going to see Nyquist, is that what we're saying?
Yep.
Excellent. All right, folks, so check out all the great action this weekend. Follow along on DRF.com and DRF Live.
Guys, I'll be in the studio
with all the action tomorrow, and we should be back for a couple of shows next week. Until then, I'm Peter Thomas Fornatel, for Jonathan Kinchin and Mike Hogan. May you win all your photos.